Hey everybody, just wanted to let you all know if you're in the region and can make it to Lexington, Kentucky on June the 4th, we'd like to invite you and any of your friends, family, Simple Church community to join us, the Simple Church Alliance, friends and family, for a evening of worship in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And we're going to be having out on a farm. There's a friends of ours have a beautiful place with a creek. Kids can play in the creek. We're inviting everyone to come. Bring a picnic dinner. Bring a lawn chair. Bring a blanket. And plan an evening with Simple Church friends and folks from around the region. And if you'd like to sing, you'd like to share a song or lead in a worship song, you'd be more than happy to do that. Go to simplechurchalliance.com and check on the events tab and give us a shout, and we can get you some more details on how you can be a part of it. Again, simplechurchalliance.com, all the info, June the 4th, Simple Church by the Creek. We hope you can join us.
Hey, this is Tom.
And this is Gavin, and you're listening to Keep It Simple. Keep It Simple is a podcast devoted to exploring life with Christ through simple, organic expressions of the church.
Hey, welcome to the show today. This is Tom LeCompte.
And I'm Gavin Dearson. We're glad that you're here with us.
One of the things that's been on my mind for the past few weeks, I just read a book, Gavin, and I sent a recommendation to you, and I hope you've read it. At least let's talk about the book and the premise. The book's called The Benedict Option by Rod Dreher. The Benedict Option, let me give you the full title. The Benedict Option, A Strategy for Christians in a Post-Christian Nation. So it's been published. I mean, it's like hot off the press.
Well, I'll just go ahead and make my confession that I have read your reviews that you sent me, but I have not read this book. So I'm going to, in this show, be prodding you as the expert on the book. And maybe I won't need to read it after this podcast is over. So
okay. Well, I can... I actually listened to it. I didn't read it because I spent too much time in my car. So, Rod Dreher is a Christian journalist who has written several books, Crunchy Cons in 2006, and then this one. But let me just get into the premise of the book, and then we'll get into what in the world does that have to do with house church, Simple Church. So the premise of his book is that, you know, in the last few decades, we've seen the decline of Christian culture in the West, not only the United States, but, you know, Europe. This is definitely a post-Christian society, and we can see it in the social mores that we see crumbling around us, the politics, the just everything.
And to be clear, I think one thing that might be helpful, because when we talk about post-Christian society, Tom, maybe we can clarify what we're talking about, because I do think that sometimes people think, when they hear those words, they think immediately, oh, are you saying we're in a society that, you know, church is still legal, nobody's, you know, putting a gun to Christians' heads, telling them they can't speak. That's not, you can be a post-Christian society and still have religious freedoms, per se.
Air quotes, you know, yeah. Religious freedom. Gavin, you and I know that is being eroded for the evangelical Christian, for the Western Christian, whether you're evangelical or like this guy Rod, he's a Eastern Orthodox, but from a Catholic background, but, you know, fully evangelical, very Orthodox.
I think what we mean when we say post-Christian, you tell me if I'm wrong, is that the foundational idea of that we get our standards for life, morality, right and wrong, those things are derived from a Christian worldview or from a Christian foundation, that as a society or as a culture, that's when we say we've moved beyond that is no longer the case for the majority of people in America. They're no longer getting their foundations, and they're viewing Christianity as some sort of baseline for life, morality, right and wrong, eternity, these sorts of things.
Right.
Is that right?
I mean, I would agree with that, and I think Rod Dreher would also agree with that based on his book. And but his thesis for the book, and I'm going to play you a clip from an interview that he had with Albert Mohler, which describes the book. But I'm going to let you explain his. I'm going to let him, Rod Dreher, explain his thesis.
His most recent book is The Benedict Option, A Strategy for Christians in a Post-Christian Nation. Rod Dreher, welcome to Thinking in Public. Rod, the entire thesis of your book is that we're now in a changed situation as Christians in the context of North America, of the United States of America. And you point to several historical developments of which we are all acutely aware in making that point. But just state your thesis as clearly as you might to someone who has no idea actually why you wrote this book.
I believe that we are on the edge of, and in fact within, the collapse of Western civilization. It's a very comfortable collapse because we're rich, but it's collapsing nonetheless in the same way that the Roman civilization collapsed in the West in the 5th century. I believe that Christians now have got to realize that we're living in a post-Christian civilization and take measures to build a kind of ark for ourselves with which to ride out the dark ages, to hold on to our faith and tender the faith for such a time as light returns and civilization wants to hear the gospel again.
You know, the metaphor that I sometimes see used economically is that of an iceberg, and that is that icebergs that melt tend to melt very slowly. And it seems that we're now on the rather acute side of that melt.
Right, the ice crack, the crack in the iceberg is becoming acute. That's why so many millennials are greater than any in anything in recorded history are walking away from the faith. That God is not the center of American culture or of Western civilization anymore. But it's easy to think that this is alarmist when you look around you, especially if you live in the South as I do, and see churches everywhere. But go inside those churches, talk to the people about what they know about the historic Christian faith. You'll often find it's very, very thin. And I think that the loss of faith among the elites in society is huge. Christianity is now a minority position, and in many places at the highest levels of our society, it's considered bigotry. Orthodox Christianity is considered bigotry. This is not going to get any better. My argument in the book is this has been going on for centuries. We've been building this increasing secularization for centuries, and we're just now living out the fruits of things that happened in this culture, in the Enlightenment especially, and in the Industrial Revolution. This is not a time for panic, but it is a time for Christians to take seriously the times we're in, to read the signs of the times, and to respond in a responsible way, in a clear way, in a patient way.
Christians in the West, especially North America, we have lost the culture war. We are in decline as an influential force in the West. And we need to start acting accordingly, planning accordingly. We're not going to get it back. We're not going to fight and establish it again. So we're in a decline in the West, similar to the Roman Empire in the 5th century. And so he's saying, we're going to lose. We've already lost. But here's what we can do. We can preserve the Christian worldview by becoming the best Christians, by becoming the best churches we know how to be, and getting serious about our faith. He calls it the Benedict option because he's not that we're going to become monks like Saint Benedict, but he is very impressed and enamored by Saint Benedict and how he reacted when Rome fell. And Benedict's reaction was he crawled into a cave for 3 years, but he spent that 3 years praying and becoming closer to the Lord, becoming sanctified, becoming a hermit. But at the end of that 3 years, what he did was he created the Order of Benedict, and his family established he established some abbeys. His sister established some convents on the premise that we have got to become the best Christians we know how to be. We're not retreating from the world, but we're trying to preserve our Christianity in the best way we know how to do, so that we can go out and influence the culture. And that's what the Order of Benedict did back in, you know, after the 5th century and for centuries after that. So that's his basic premise. He cites examples like, you know, we've definitely lost the culture in the subjects of sexuality. You know, the sexual revolution that started in the 1960s has pretty much come to fruition. It keeps going, and we have not been able to do anything to slow that down at all, so that, you know, it's sexually in this society, anything goes, contrary to what, you know, what principles you might read in the Bible. So, one of the examples he uses was, you know, his wife went to a baby shower at his church, and almost all of the women were single moms that were about to have their babies. So he said, you know, that's just one indication. And, you know, he's not here to attack, and I'm not here to attack, you know, single women having babies. That's not the point. But he uses that as an example that look where our society has gone over the years, over the decades, over the centuries. So some examples. So he really admires the discipline and the order that Benedict came up with for his monks, and how, you know, they didn't just retreat behind their walls and pray and be silent, things like that, but they used that development to go out into the society of the time and to change it and to help it and to serve, you know, that society. You know, they engaged in work, they engaged in creative ways to engage the society, and basically what it did through the Dark Ages, it preserved Christianity. And he's saying we may be ready for a similar time. You know, we may have to preserve Christianity in a society that's hostile to it. And, you know, we may be living in a Dark Ages where to be a Christian is to be countercultural, to be radically countercultural. And it's always been radically countercultural, but I mean in a way that, like, is going to be dangerous to be a Christian.
Yeah. I'll chime in here and I'll just offer a little bit some thoughts. I think one of the terms that he used is this idea of us creating arcs that will get us through this storm.
An arc like Noah's Ark.
Yeah, and I like that. As far as that is concerned, and I know this podcast, we're going to relate this, and probably the listeners already are thinking in these terms, how does this relate to Simple Church and what we're talking about here on this podcast and advocating? And I would say I would agree that in many ways, one image of Simple Church that can be helpful is that of an ark. In fact, I've told people before the exact analogy that I think a lot of what God has called me to be a part of is helping believers get out in the water in their boats and get their sails up ready to go for when the Holy Spirit's wind blows. And so in that sense, I think there is a sense in which Simple Church is a good way to think of that ark. And I think it is a good ark, a good boat, a good framework to think about living out the Christian faith in a post-Christian culture. I think there's a lot of things that make sense about it for those reasons, and a lot of those things we've discussed at length on this show and will continue to do. Here's my one pushback on this. I'm obviously have not read this book. You're the expert, so you tell me where we're wrong in this conversation. We're using this book that you've read as a springboard to this discussion.
Right.
But I think there can sometimes, and again, everything is, you can always go to extremes. And when we evaluate our world, our culture, where we are, I think that what he's advocating and what he's talking about is true, so long as it's balanced in a sense, because I don't think that the whole story, in fact, I know there are people in house church that probably, I mean, I've had people say, well, I really like the idea of house church because it's a way for us to essentially create a monastery. We can sort of withdraw from the world You know, it's a way for us to have our group of friends who we all know are serious about their faith, that we don't have to sit in a room full of lots of people that we think a lot of them are not real serious about faith. We can have our group of friends who we know are committed and serious about their faith, and then we can just say to heck with everybody else, you know. And not that people word it that way, but I think that when you kind of, you know, there's a reason I'm not Amish. You know, there's a reason that I think that the Christian's call, and part of the reason why I do house church, is not to create just an ark that will isolate me
right.
to preserve Christianity.
Yeah.
But I think it is also, when that wind of the Holy Spirit blows, it is an advancing ark. It is something that is going to, you know, infiltrate. It's an ark that is able to go places and take the gospel to new lands. And so,
right.
you know, that's the only thing I think I get a little bit of in my heart. Like, it's part of the nature of how I think God's wired me. But, you know, I don't think what we're trying to do is just simply preserve Christianity until some later date down the road when people decide all of a sudden they want to learn about God again.
Right.
You know, I think that would be it over. That would be too much of an isolationist type of an idea about what we're trying to be about.
Yeah. I had mixed feelings reading the book, but I see the book as a good conversation starter, which is exactly what we're doing now. And I totally agree with you, Gavin, that, you know, the concept of simple church with, you know, withdrawing from the vast organized church, if you will, and just gathering with a bunch of like-minded people in our living rooms and being happy with that, that's a little nearsighted, and that's not what we're advocating. I kind of agree that with his assessment of the society, I don't see us ever becoming as influential as we ever were. And what I've seen over the past 30, 40 years, you know, with, you know, even starting with the seeker-sensitive movement, you know, where we're, we tried to be a little bit more like the world in order to attract the world. We've seen the results of that, and all that did was water us down so that we're not as effective as we used to be as a church. And so, you know, we've kind of lost the culture war. I mean, you just look at the laws and the executive orders and the Supreme Court decisions that have been made for culture in the past 5 years, and it makes my head spin how fast we've changed. And a big part of the church is trying to keep up with that change by conforming to what the laws are saying. And, you know, you just look at same-sex marriage. I mean, a lot of churches are embracing that. And, you know, if you're a Bible-believing conservative like myself, that makes my head spin. So we've lost that war. Maybe temporarily. I hope it's just temporarily. But, you know, we're not going to get it back through electing the right president. We're not going to get it back by, you know, even nominating the right Supreme Court justice. The way we're going to get it back, if we're ever going to get it back at all, is by being the best Christian we know how to be, by being the best church we know how to be, and living the best life. You know, this is exactly what happened in the first century, you know, after the resurrection. Within 3 decades, the church moved from a small group, you know, 120 people in Jerusalem, to turning the world upside down within 3 decades. That's what it's going to take. So they did it. They were an ark, but they were also an army, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so here's my only, again, just to provide a little pushback. I don't know. And I'm speaking this, and I could be convinced otherwise myself. I'm kind of what I'm about to say. Don't, and I'm not like hardcore on this, but this is what I wrestle with internally: is that when we talk about getting it back, we're talking about getting this Christian culture back,
right?
And my question is do we want that Christian culture back? Like
yeah.
that Christian
we
culture.
Don't...
You know, I don't know, even when we say post-Christian, I mean, I think there's no doubt that we used to have these Judeo-Christian views in our country and values that informed who we were as a nation, that we see that eroding. But I also don't think that God is up there. And, you know, to me, I just look at it more of that God is always moving his church forward. and he is moving it to a place. It's always going forward. It's not in every good football game, you've got to sometimes run backwards to be able to find the hole to run upfield.
Right.
So, you know, that could be the case. But I see and believe that there's this refining that's always been happening since in the scriptures when we read in the book of Acts and we read the letters, and there was refining going on about understanding of what the church was and what it was supposed to be. That refining process is still continuing today. And in some ways, I guess I want there to be freedom and justice and laws, rule of law based upon what is true, which I believe is found in scriptures and teaching. But my view on things, and part of the reason why I do Simple Church, is because I believe that God is doing this refining, and it does involve a shift in what it means and looks like to be a part of His church. Mm-hmm. And I don't generally think of that as a defensive thing, I think of it. I don't do Simple Church. I don't homeschool my kids in order solely to, or even at the top, is not to protect them from the evils of this world. There's a piece of that. Like, there's a part of why that, you know, it would make sense. But I think there is this offensive aspect of the church that has always been present. It's still present today. Does that mean that everyone in America is going to become Christians?
Do you mean offensive as in, like, football offensive, or offensive like, I can't stand it offensive?
Maybe both.
I think both, yeah.
But I think that it's just, you know, the balance of, yeah, I'm all about, I think there could be some truth in this preservation aspect.
Yeah.
And there could be a day coming that maybe next year or in our grandchildren's lifetime where there is a revival that happens in our nation. I hope that happens. I hope I live to see it. I hope it happens this year. But I'm not generally, I think as house churches, Simple Church folks, like, if we're doing this in order to kind of put up our walls and kind of retreat from society and even the Christian culture, from culture in general, and wait for some sort of, like, thing to happen that all of a sudden we're going to be of value, then I think we could use this line of thinking. Satan could come in and tempt us to take something that is true, which I think some of these ideas are, and use them to become something that God does not intend His church to be.
I agree. I think the big word that kept flashing through my brain when I read this book was balance, balance, balance. You know, are we an ark or are we a battleship? Are we retreating behind walls to get strengthened? I think what Rod would say is we're if we retreat behind walls like a monastery to be strengthened, it's only to, at some point in time or periodically, to leave those walls and go out and influence the world around us. So, and that's exactly what monks did
And I do think that what he's writing is this call to this deeper Christian life.
Yes.
That Christianity in our culture would not be this shallow, surfacey level, consumeristic type of thing. And that is something, if you know anybody's listening to this podcast any length, you know that's a whole thing of why we're doing this.
Right.
You know, that it is this call to be the church in a genuine way, a way that seems to reflect more closely to the kind of church life and church that we see in the scriptures. Maybe not exactly like that, because obviously there was problems even with those churches. But again, to move forward and to live out our faith in a way that isn't, you know, that is authentic and real and passionate and true to the call of the gospel and those sorts of things, I think 100% in agreement with. And whether or not that ends up looking like defense or offense, you know, I think that'll be up to the Lord. We just have to live out our day-to-day lives as the Lord leads and be willing to share our faith and make disciples and help others come to faith. And if that's 1,000 or one, you know, we just be faithful.
Three things I wrote down that I think that the Simple Church, the house church, the organic church could assist Rod Dreher in, you know, in his concept. I'll just read them to you, and you comment on either one of them. One is community. He was big on community, you know, the Christian community. The other is a commitment, a strong commitment to biblical Christianity. You know, be the best Christian, be the best church you can be. And the third C, see how I did my alliteration there? Be counterculture. That's the whole reason we're in trouble now, is because we're trying to be so much like the culture that we're not different enough to change the culture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and again, I would just say that
we're not swimming upstream like we used to.
Yeah,
we're going with the flow.
Yeah, and I think the real challenge is in all this is how do we be countercultural, counterculture, but not isolationist?
And, yes,
you know, I think that always comes down to relationships. You know, and you know, you can be as counterculture as you want to be, and that can make you stand out literally like, sometimes I think that we take this countercultural thing to the degree of saying, well, I'm going to, you know, dress like this so that I will stand out. Well, yeah. I think it is more about how you appear or the kind of lingo you use, or it's about truly, if you truly are following Christ and obeying his teachings, you're going to be countercultural.
Yeah.
You don't have to set out to try to be countercultural. And I think the important part about that is if you're doing that, it will by virtue mean that you are relevant to this culture, because Jesus was relevant to the culture. He was counterculture, but he was relevant. And that was because he engaged them in relationship. He went
yes.
to where they were. He he approached them. He engaged them in dialogue. He didn't withdraw. And again, completely. That's what we see, and that's the kind of people I think that we're to be.
So it's a good conversation. I highly recommend the book, if nothing else, so that you would have a similar conversation. If you've read the book, tell us what you thought of it. Tell us what you think his assessment of our culture is, and if we're on track, or if he's on track, or if we're all way off base. We'd love to hear from you. I enjoyed the book, and I hope Gavin enjoys the book when he reads it.
Well, I think that'll lead us right into the stuff we like section, which I guess this whole episode has been a stuff that you like. I'd like to kind of throw out something I've been really enjoying lately that I think everyone here perhaps might find enjoyable as well. I don't know. I must have been sleeping in history class, because I'm realizing often just how little I know about history. But there's a podcast that I ventured into this past couple of weeks. We were on vacation, and I was able to download some of these episodes. But the podcast, it is called, and if you go, I think iTunes and him will have it, but it's Ed Carlin's Hardcore History.
Oh, yes.
And I actually want to make sure. Yeah, I'm sorry. It is called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Yes.
And this podcast is, I remember downloading it like a while back, and I tried to listen to it, and then I realized, like, man, this one episode is like 4 hours long.
No, he doesn't do short podcasts.
I don't have the time to listen to this, but on my vacation, got into it. And here's what there's a series on there right now that it's a little bit old, but you can kind of go through the whole thing if you're traveling this summer. It's called Blueprint for Armageddon, and there's 6 different ones, and each one are about 3 or 4 hours, so it's long. But it's all about history of World War One, and
oh man,
I knew nothing about World War One, and I'm about to finish it up. But it's been truly fascinating. My wife and I listened to it, and having grandparents that fought in World War Two, it's just fascinating to really get a. He puts you right in the action,
right.
And some of it's really hard to listen to. If you know a lot about World War One, I think you'd find it fascinating to listen to. If you know nothing about World War One, you definitely will learn a lot. And his style, one of the things I love about this podcast and his style is he really it's very dramatic in his presentation. He says, I'm not a historian, but he is a storyteller.
He is a good storyteller.
Yeah. So he, you know, check it out, Blueprint for Armageddon, start on show 50. And buckle up and get ready to learn about World War One.
I just finished one called The Destroyer of Worlds, and it talks about the atomic age and how life has changed since we developed atomic weapons in the 40s. So,
yeah.
And how that's changed the whole world, how we relate to one another, and very, very, very fascinating. And that one was 6 hours. So yeah. It's like reading a book. Yeah. So, yeah, good.
So bug. Maybe, Dan, if you're listening, you can give us a shout-out on your podcast. We really enjoy that. Check it out and get ready to get your learn on this summer.
Yeah. So, Gavin, stuff I like. Now that the weather's warm, I enjoy kayaking. My wife and I bought some kayaks a couple years ago for our birthday, and every chance we get when I'm off, we just lash them to the top of the SUV, and we will take off and go find a place to put in. Hopefully that it's free. But, you know, we've been to the Kentucky River. We've been to various lakes around. We've been to some creeks and some small rivers. But I just love kayaking. It's cheap. It's a cheap thrill. It's just a whole lot of fun. It doesn't take a lot of effort or money. So,
someone wanted to get started kayaking, where would you recommend them to go?
I would get online and Google. It depends on what kind of kayaking you want to do. I mean, if you're in a place where there's some good white water, tread slowly. I mean, that's not what we're into. We're what we call flat water kayakers, which means we like the lakes. We like the still rivers. If it involves rapids or anything like that, we're just not that good yet. So
yeah, maybe next year.
But yeah, Dick's Sporting Goods. I mean, if you just want a cheap, good kayak, do some online research. But we bought ours at Dick's Sporting Goods. Didn't spend a whole lot of money, but it's a cheap thrill, cheap vacation.
Well,
good times.
Sounds good. That'll do it. Thanks for listening today. This has been Keep It Simple Podcast, and we'll see you back here next time with some more, sure to be life-changing discussion.
Thanks for listening to Keep It Simple. If you've enjoyed this podcast, leave us a comment at keepitsimplepodcast.com or find us on iTunes or Facebook. We welcome your feedback, your ratings, your questions, or comments.